Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Lost in the Static. I'm Scott Murray, and with me, as always, is Josh Hadley, the most beloved man on the internet.
Thank you for playing the open instead of the tag at the end, which is what the first take of this was.
Yes, the first 2 second take of this was. Well, it helps if I actually.
It was like the Godzilla music that you hear at the end
exactly.
of the show.
Because
so,
I'm brilliant.
Thank you for that.
I am brilliant. Professional sound engineer right the fuck here.
Then do the RPG promo and the Adam and Eve promo seamlessly.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. If you go to RPG.com and enter the promo code static,
drive through RPG. I said seamlessly. No, you go from one to the other, not integrating.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. So what you want me to do is tell the people to go to drivethroughrpg.com, buy the systemless settings bundle from my friend Al. We get a little cut of it. Daddy gets a little taste. And
you get a light bulb joke as well as the systemless settings.
Let them know that we sent you, and you get a free light bulb joke with it. And they're, I'm not saying these aren't quality light bulb jokes. These are not.
Well, if it's free, but, what do you expect? You know,
but they're good light bulb jokes. And speaking of sockets and things you can twist into them.
You don't want to be putting light bulbs. You want to be going to adamandeve.com without putting a light bulb inside
yourself.
Exactly.
Don't put a light bulb anywhere, and don't put any part of your anatomy into a light bulb socket. That's just generally a good idea. But if you want to find something soft and squishy, either to insert into you or to insert yourself in, or if you want to find lingerie or underwear or movies or all kinds of adult products, you can go to adamandeve.com, and as you're checking out, you can use the promo code STATIC, S-T-A-T-I-C, and you get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, Spank DVDs, quality stuff. I've ordered from them. I've got some of those DVDs there, and they're not bad. And then you also get a free mystery gift and free shipping
in the
United States.
In Canada's Mexico.
Yes.
So, now, you tell them what the topic is, and then I'll tell them what I wanted to start the show with and why you think it was inappropriate.
Why it was inappropriate, period.
All right,
end
fair
of
enough.
Story.
But explain the topic.
Okay. To give you guys an idea of what's going on right now as we record this, Robin Williams committed suicide.
By the time you hear this, it'll be a couple of weeks in the past, but it'll still be relevant.
Right. Be a couple of weeks in the past, still be relevant. But for us, it was fresh. It was just a few days ago. And the internet exploded, both the good and the bad.
Fox News called him a coward.
Fox News called him a coward. NBC, ABC hilariously at the bottom of their webpage said the family asks that we respect their privacy in this time, and then at the top of their webpage said live pictures of Robin
of his
Williams' house
from our helicopter.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get into that later. I don't understand that whole thing. Let's look at his house.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
I don't either. But nonetheless, we're going to be talking about mental health and the state of mental health in the United States.
And I wanted to open the show with Hart's Crazy on You, but he thought that was very, very inappropriate.
I thought it was funny. I didn't say it wasn't funny. I just think it would be inappropriate.
All right. I want comments when this gets posted on whether you think it was funny and appropriate or funny and inappropriate.
But this again also is the internet. And I got to say, I feel really bad for Robin Williams' daughter right now. Not only has she lost her dad, but people have emailed photoshopped pictures of like Robin Williams with a noose around his neck and stuff like that.
To be fair, the majority of the internet has come out remembering her dad like as a brilliant comedian and a fantastic actor. So yes, you're always going to get the scumbags that are leaning the wrong direction. But I would say the majority of people, at least that I have seen,
yes, the majority, yeah,
we've lost a great artist.
Exactly. And the reason I wanted to talk about mental health was because Robin Williams kind of, it's always been part of his life and part of his act. He has never been hidden about his troubles with substance abuse and his fight with depression and other mental issues. Yes, he's very funny. He was very jovial on the outside. And my wife Dawn and I were talking about this. And people that are battling depression, like me and like Dawn and like a few other people I know, can be very, very good at putting on the mask, putting on the smile, and really hiding it as best that we can, because we know we have to. Because if you don't, you either become a miserable person to be around, or you get most anybody over the age of 30 looks at you and goes, well, what's wrong? Just cheer up. Just cheer up. I mean, really, that's all you have to do is just cheer up.
Well, and see, my wife has depression. She didn't have it prior to her injury, I think I can safely say this is due to her head injury, that she has the severe depression, you know, that it there were no signs of this prior to her head injury. So I think that's a side effect of that or of her medications. But I have encountered that myself, where I just don't understand. And obviously this is me looking at it from the outside. I don't understand how we're having a great day, you know, great day with the family, maybe, you know, we saw a really good movie, had a nice dinner, and she's still all, my life is horrible. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, get over it. That's me looking at it from the outside. I'm just, God damn it, why can't you just enjoy something? People say that to me all the time, because you know I'm a miserable curmudgeon of a fuck.
Right.
But I don't have depression. I have unresolved anger issues. You know, I'm an angry motherfucker. That's not the same thing.
See, and I have depression, and the best way that I can describe it is, we're out in space, okay? You get a hole in your spacesuit, and all of the air in your spacesuit is zipping out of this hole, and the pressure is failing, and you're asphyxiating. And I walk up to you and go, just breathe. There's air in the hose. Just breathe. Come on, just breathe. And you want to. You know, if you have this hole in your spacesuit, you want to breathe. But then a lot of times if you reach down and try and fix this hole in your spacesuit so that you can breathe, so that you can live and laugh and everything like that, if you try and fix this hole, there's a lot of people out there that'll look at you and go, pussy.
Well, let me ask you a question. If it's too personal, you can dodge it.
It's okay.
And that's fine. So when you are clinically depressed, and I mean this you as not the royal you, okay? You are clinically depressed. Do you enjoy anything like playing a video game, shooting some motherfucker in the face online, or watching a good porno and jacking off? I mean, or is it... is it like a blanket?
I can tell you that I can give you an answer for me, and I can tell you what it's like.
That's
for
what
me
I asked with, you with for my, you.
And I know, but I'm just saying that this may be an answer that doesn't fit everybody. It depends on the person. It's a very personal thing. But for me, when I hit a depressive episode, when that clinical depression really kicks in, all I want to do is stay in bed. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to deal with anybody. I don't want to get up. I don't want to shower. I don't want to go to work. All I want to do is stay in bed. And no, I really don't. Absolutely nothing can kick you out of it. I don't know if you've ever been...
I get... And I know this is a really pedestrian term, but I get down in the dumps and shit, you know, when shit really goes bad and whatnot. But the way I deal with it, which is probably not a healthy way to deal with it, is through anger. I get pissed.
That
and
is
I
not
fight,
a healthy way to deal with it.
And
yes.
I fight. And, you know, like, I'm not going to go into the details, but like, you know, my exit from Geek Juice. I could have been depressed about that. Instead, I was pissed about that.
Sure.
I don't think that was probably a healthy response, but that was my response, was anger. And I want to, and it's not a blame thing. And this isn't about the Geek Juice thing. This is about just in general. It's not a blame thing. When I get mad, I don't necessarily want to make somebody pay, but I feel like, you know how when you do or say something stupid, say you're getting into a fight with your wife, you know, you really want to say some response. You know it's going to end badly. You know there's no way this is not going to end badly, but you say it anyway because it makes you feel better. That's the way being mad makes me. Ironically enough, being angry makes me feel better. I know that's an oxymoron, but that's the way it is with me. No, I like being mad.
That is more common than you may think. And a lot of personalities out there, a lot of type A personalities, and a lot of people. Josh, specifically, can use and do use anger as a motivator. I've found that usually I've found that when you don't feel like doing something or when you really are depressed and I need you to do something, like edit some shit, mister, is all I have to do is pick on you a little bit and make you angry. Like, you know what crap you're supposed to edit for me and you haven't?
Because my response will be, you know what? Fuck you then. Yeah. Fine, here, now fucking get away from me.
Exactly. You know, anger, for you at least, can be a big motivator. And for a lot of people out there, it can be a motivation to get up and do something. I should write. So you get angry with yourself and get up and you write.
I think one of the biggest things when it comes to the anger versus depression thing is, like, if I'm told, like, let's say I'm applying to a magazine, I'm trying to sell an article, and they'll be like, well, you know, we don't think you're right for us. My response could be, oh, God, you know, that's because I suck. But my response is, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to show you. I'm going to sell this to a bigger magazine and then send you a copy and rub your fucking face in it.
Right. Right.
Probably not healthy, but that's the way I operate. No, fuck you. I'm going to show you different.
No, it isn't healthy. It can be. It can be helpful, but it isn't healthy. But the way that I can describe depression, like true clinical depression, is imagine being in a state of mind where you don't remember when you were last happy, and you don't believe at all that you will ever be happy again, no matter what happens.
Now, for that descriptor, define happy, because, like, I know a lot of people, and my marriage was there for quite a while as well, where you would kindly describe it as in a rut. But I was never unhappy to the point where, like, I got to get out of this situation. I know some people that get to that point. I know other people that don't. To me, it's, I don't know, I was always raised, you deal with your situation, and maybe this is because of my alcoholic father and the abuse I suffered as a kid. I was always kind of taught curling up into a ball and feeling sorry for yourself is, I'm going to use the word, the faggot way out. That's what fags do. You're not a fag, are you?
Right.
That, and, you know, you're a man and you fucking deal with shit.
And to be clear, you're using that word because it was the word used with you.
Well, and this was also the 80s, right. You know, fag was a very disparaging term that,
right.
Ironically enough, maybe even less than now. It might actually be worse now, but whatever, that's a whole different topic.
Yeah. Well,
but,
yes.
But do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying, and I see where you're coming from, and I understand where your background is and why you're motivated to get angry during this stuff and why curling up in a ball isn't a choice. What I'm saying is depression itself can be like drowning. I want to swim. I'm in that spacesuit. I have a hole, but you just kind of, there's nothing you can do to fix it. There's nothing you can do to breathe. And anytime you do try and fix it or do try and deal with that hole, you get ostracized from society. How dare he want to breathe? And that's what depression is like. And imagine if you got angry, not being able to do anything while you're angry. And all you do is get angrier and angrier, and instead of you lashing out the way you do, sometimes when people get angry and angry, they retreat in.
Well, see, and the way I am is when I get angry, I get focused. To me, anger focuses me on my target. And I know to some people, it obscures the target.
Yeah, see, I'm just...
To me, I'm able to focus in like a laser. When I'm mad... Anger is not only a motivator, it gives me tunnel vision for both good and bad for what that means, but it gives me tunnel vision to do what I need to do.
And I'm just the opposite. I mean, you've seen me when I get angry. I do have a temper on me. I do have reactions, and I have to step away from everything and deal with that anger because I don't have it. I can't deal with anything else until I do.
Okay, how many times have you gotten angry when I've been in your presence? And I have, and it to me, it's something really minor. And I'm like, dude, you're like ready to smash your keyboard over something minor. Just back the fuck off and think this through. And see, when I get angry, like I said, it focuses me, so I'm able to think the problem through more. Where at this, you know, I have an issue with inanimate objects. Sometimes, you know, like the drawer sticks a little bit or something, you just flip out and pull the fucking drawer out and break it all, and then you go, well, that I shouldn't have done, but now I have a project. Now I get to fix the drawer.
Yeah, no, I've been there plenty of times. And VCRs. I did not have good luck with VCRs. You would be amazed at how many VCRs ended up. There was one VCR that went out of a fourth-story window in Evansville, Indiana. And the window was closed at the time. I just ripped that fucker out of the wall and threw it out the window.
See, I've always found throwing things are not good because when I do it, it always just makes the situation worse. I remember I don't remember what video game it was. I got pissed at like a Game Boy game. And I threw it on the floor. It bounced off the floor and went through a window. And it actually broke the window. And I was like, wow, that could have gone better.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there with specifically the VCR. It ain't one of my favorite. I don't even remember. That's the shitty thing. I don't even remember what tape it was, but I remember I really liked the tape, and it completely destroyed
but
it.
There is a limit to my anger. I also get really, really pissed at video games and minor shit, too. You don't know how many times I have pretty much thrown my controller across the room in just pure fucking... Because I'm sorry, I know this is off topic, but when the AI cheats, I just lose my shit when the AI cheats on me.
It's one of the reasons why I'm nervous about doing Let's Plays on YouTube.
In case the AI cheats, or in case you flip out?
In case I flip the fuck out. Because you know me, I'm going to be like, well, I really should edit that out and appear human to these people. But games like VelociBox and the Impossible Game and the Impossible Quiz.
I don't even know what those are, so.
You don't even have to. I'll show you some on YouTube in a little bit. They are games where the core mechanic of the game is to frustrate the player.
Super Mario Brothers frustration?
Yes. Yeah. You know, unfair Sonic or something like that. The very core of the game is to frustrate the player. Those are extremely popular Let's Plays online. And I'm afraid that I'm going to end up destroying my computer if I play those.
But keeping with anger in video games, because this does tie in, but then don't you feel, I mean, even if you're depressed, say this boss in a game has kicked your ass 5 times and you're just really getting frustrated. Don't you get elated when you finally beat him and you're like, yeah, fuck you. Take it, bitch. Take it. To me, that pumps me up.
See,
that I finally fucking beat you.
After a while, it just kind of dawns on me that, no, I'm not worthy. Here's depression. Here for you, it gets pumped up. It gets you ready to go, and you know I'm gonna beat this motherfucker. Here is depression.
I will not let them beat me. Right.
Here is depression on a video game level. Instead of going, okay, I'm gonna beat this fucker, you turn around and there's a little voice inside your head that says, you're not worthy of beating the fucker. You're too stupid to beat him. You're an idiot and you deserve to die. No one wants you around. No one loves you. No one cares about you. No one gives a shit. And this video game is what's showing that to you.
And see, imagine, that just doesn't click with me. You know?
With my clinical depression, and I'm willing to bet with your wife's clinical depression, with Dawn's issues, multiple, there is a voice. I've spent Christmases with my family where, and my family, I love giving gifts. That's one of the reasons why I like working in food service. I make people happy for a living. Even if they come in hungry, they leave full. My day is complete. My family is like that with giving gifts. If you can give a very useful and a gift that somebody really is going to treasure for a long time, like Dawn gave my niece Jenna a little purple pony. She still sleeps with the damn thing. This is, I get gifts from my family like that. Gifts that I've wanted, that I will find useful and that I would love. And there's a voice in the back of my head. They are buying this for you so that you'll go away. They don't want you here. They don't love you. Nobody loves you. You're not worth loving. You're stupid and you're worthless. And there is no point in you living. There's that voice in the back of my head now. I can hear it. I have those thoughts constantly.
Then let me ask, I'm going to ask about a split here. What's the difference between that type of thinking and paranoia, which I don't think will be a surprise to anyone to know I'm kind of a paranoid individual?
Well, paranoia is...
Because that to me sounds a little like paranoia, because I get that where, I'm pretty decent at reading people. And I can tell when people are just telling me what I want to hear right, to make me leave. And I don't mean that in like a depression way, like you said, but I mean, you can tell by a cadence and whatnot that they just want you to leave.
They're satiating you.
Yes. And depending on if I'm angry or not, I'll either let that go and go, well, I still got what I wanted, so fuck them. Or I'll confront them about it, depending on if I'm angry already at that point. But what's the difference between paranoia and depression?
The difference between paranoia and depression. Paranoia is when you believe that people are out to get you.
No, I'm not talking about that kind of paranoia.
Okay.
I mean paranoia that not that people are out to get you, but that people that I don't want to say like there's a conspiracy, like a universal conspiracy against you, but that things are just, I hate this word, destined to not go your way. That, like, you know me, I'm a backup freak. I don't do anything without a backup.
If I make a
file, if every DVD I own, I have a DVD-R of in case something happens. Now, that is clear paranoia, but is that a bad paranoia?
That can be a healthy paranoia. When you're dealing with things, when you're dealing with computers and stuff like that.
I'm even talking ideas. Whenever we go in to do something, whenever I come up with a story or even just an idea, I have a backup. In case that doesn't work, I'll do this.
That's healthy. That's having alternatives. I wouldn't even call that paranoia.
My wife says I take it too far because I go three or four steps. Okay, then if step two doesn't work, then I'll do this. If that doesn't work, then I'll do this. It's like, dude, you are really overthinking this.
Well, so what? You know, that to me is healthy. It's good to have backup plans, and that's what you're talking about. I don't think what you're talking about is true paranoia. You know, if you really wanted to think of it as paranoia, is I have all of these backups because I know that somebody wants to come into my house and erase my shit.
I've had too many blue screens of death that I would like to keep as many of these files as possible.
That's called healthy planning. That's not paranoia.
Well, because I mean, like paranoia by the definition would be like the government's out to get me and I got to wear the hat to stop the spiders from Mars from reading my thoughts kind of shit. That's not what I'm talking about when I'm asking you about paranoia.
Okay, you're asking me about good planning and having backups. That's
well, no, because to me, like they want you to go away. That rings to me of paranoia, but not to a crazy level.
Okay. You're hung up on this term paranoia, and you've got your definition wrong.
Because that's where my head is right. Seeing it.
Depression and true depression, you've given me a classic, I'm depressed, I don't know how to deal with this deal when we talk about our friendship. Because we have in the past. I mean, we've argued, we've been friends, we fight. And
we've been friends for 7 years, 8 years maybe?
8 years, almost as long as I've been married. And you've looked at me and you go, I don't know why you're my friend. I'm not worthy of your friendship. And that...
I've had my low moments, man. You know that.
That's depression. Depression, as opposed to paranoia, depression is that I'm not worthy of this. When you think of yourself truly as a waste of an individual, and it's not that... See, I'm kind of weird because I am depressed, but I'm not suicidal. I don't want to kill myself. I just don't want to live. I want to fade away. I want to die. I just don't want to off myself. Well, the best days of my life are past. I've got nothing more to offer this world.
And see, I guarantee I'm going to take shit for what I'm about to say. When it comes to suicide, I do not agree with the whole, it's a coward's act out, okay? Like, you know, Shepard Smith said.
Right.
But I do think suicide is an ungodly, selfless, and selfish act. Because it's all about, now, you know me, I help out everyone I can, Scott. You know anybody, you know, you've got a body to bury, you come to me with a problem, I'll try and help you.
Right.
To me, it seems, let's just, for the sake of example, you're going to commit suicide, okay?
All right.
That would, to me, that would make me angry at you because all you cared about was how it made you feel. And not how it made Dawn feel, not how it made me feel, not how it made any of your friends feel, that you put yourself at the center and said, fuck everybody else, this is all about me. That is the issue I have with suicide, is it's the most selfish thing you can do. And I will never forgive, and I've had people close to me kill themselves, I will never forgive that selfish final act. And I know how angry that probably is going to make some of the listeners, but I do not agree with suicide because of that.
I'm right there with you. I mean, I've had 5 friends, including 2 very, very close friends, kill themselves, and one back in high school even. My freshman year or so, we had a classmate kill himself. And when you're in that kind of a situation, I can understand where that selfish view is. I tell people that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem because there is help out there. And it's a difficult recovery, but it is a recovery. And it may be an ongoing thing, you know, but the truth is, I think we need to back up and make sure that people understand that I see depression, clinical depression, bipolar disorder, all of this, these mental health issues where a lot of people look and just go, well, why can't you just cheer up? It's really hard to look at these people and make them understand that I have a disease. I have a sickness, just like somebody who has AIDS, they have to deal with AIDS and they have to, you know, be on that drug cocktail and watch their levels and deal with that for the rest of their life. And yes, AIDS may be terminal, but
well, everything is when you get down to it.
Right. But at the same time, they can live a long life with the right help. Otherwise they do. They get the flu and they fade away. I have depression. I have a very similar sickness. And I'm going to get shit for comparing depression and mental issues to AIDS and stuff like that. But here's my comparison. It is a sickness. It is a disease. And I have to be on medicine. Whether that medicine is a a physical pill that I take, or whether that medicine is counseling, or whether that medicine is, you know, a kitty in my lap. I have to have medicine in order to deal with this disease. And so when I talk about these mental health issues, I look at them in exactly the same way.
Well, then with those issues, what about help, the help you get? Like, I have a mild level of OCD. You've seen my OCD. I'm not seeing anybody for it. I'm dealing with it myself because that's how I feel like I'm going to work through it, is I'm going to do this myself. When it comes to something like depression, is that something you can do yourself? Or because one of the problems I have with the term depression, not the sickness, okay, the term, is first of all, it's too widely applied. There are so many people who think because they have a string of bad days that they're depressed, and they're not. I think part of our culture engenders you're the victim of something. And yes, that is not trying to take away responsibility or the affliction that real people with real depression have. But I think far too many people are labeled with it that aren't depressed. The same way, like, remember in the 90s how everything was the fault of your parents and your childhood?
Yes.
Oh, you're an asshole at 35. Well, that's because dad didn't come to your swim team meet that one time. And then he didn't actualize you as a person that day.
Or in the late 80s when it all linked back somehow to potty training. You remember that one?
Or in the 90s, repressed memories and shit like that. And, you know, I think they were trying to make victims out of people that weren't. And yes, I use the term victims because when you have an affliction, you are a victim.
Right.
Even if you don't want to see yourself as one, you are.
And that's when it comes to treatment, when
victims should not have the stigma that it does either.
Depression is like autism. You know, there is a wide spectrum of autistic individuals. My friend Jason Oblivion, he has an autistic son who is extremely high functioning, a good, quiet little kid. And what most people, most of the time, like I can't say all of the time because I know what Jason has dealt with, and I don't want to give anybody the wrong idea that he was blessed with an autistic child. But most of the time, he's a good, quiet kid, but he is medicated, and he will have to be for the rest of his life. At the same time, my neighbor in De Pere, when I lived down there, had an autistic child that would never have an intelligence above that of a 1.5-year-old. And
I've seen that, yeah.
He, you know, they are, I realize that people hate this word, but he is severely retarded in the classic sense. Retarded means
retarded
stopped.
Is a clinical term.
Yes, so. Retarded is a clinical term, means that his development reached a certain point and stopped. And that's what I'm talking about when I say it. His development was retarded. And I know how much they struggle. He is also on the autism spectrum, obviously to very, very different individuals with very, very different issues.
Probably a famous example would be Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
She came out a year or so ago saying that she's autistic.
Yes.
I don't know if she's high functioning or just being an actress. She was good at hiding it, but Harrison Ford and all these other people that worked with her were like, I never knew.
Yeah. And you know, depression is the same way. It's a spectrum because you have people like, on my wife's end of depression, where if she doesn't get counseling, if she stops her meds, she bounces between these manic states where everything in the house will be immensely clean. She has to stop at every light switch and shut it on and off 3 times for, you know, whatever reason. And nothing will ever be clean enough, and she's running all the time. She can't sleep for days, versus when she gets into a depressive state where it's a fight to get her to move out of bed. It's a fight to get her awake. And you've got that side. You've got my side of depression where if I don't keep myself occupied, I have the exact opposite reaction you would growing up, where I just curl up in a ball and you know, dealing with the abuse of my childhood and dealing with what happened to me, that was my only defense. And so that's that. It's a learned depression.
Well, how about when depression is something that is, when I say foisted upon you, I don't mean like, you know, somebody gave it to you, but I mean it, where that is your reaction to some sort of outside stimuli. For instance, now this is something, I've never been raped, so I don't understand this whole thing from rape victims, okay? But the general response is to shut down and kind of just pretend it never happened. And I know a lot of, whereas to me, if I was raped, I told you, I'm anger. I would go, I spit on your grave on these motherfuckers.
I will rape you back, motherfucker.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you know, now that's me saying this from this state. Obviously, I don't know what my actual reaction would be, but I don't understand. Like the one, this happened to a friend of mine, and I felt like an asshole telling her this, okay? She's like, you know, the cops are like, who did it? She's like, I don't want to, you know, I just want to forget this ever happened. And I'm like, you realize he's going to do this again. Again, I'm going to go to the selfish thing. You're being selfish that the only way I can deal with this is I don't care if this happens to somebody else.
And that's,
that angers me.
I understand. And that's not an uncommon response. There's a few responses to rape when it comes to things like that. There's yours, where you get angry and you lash out. And when dealing with the LGBT community, there is a cadre of lesbians that are lesbians because they were rape victims. Now, I can't really say that, because who knows if they...
It
might have just been a tipping point, but they made the leap into complete and total lesbianism, including, along with lesbianism, a hatred of men because they were raped. And it's part of dealing with the gay community is helping them understand that, no, not all men are out to get you, and gay men can be assholes too. And it's... So there's that side of it that I know, and that's usually the anger and the lashing out that I know of. Another common response is, if I cover everything up and I clean up and I take a shower and I walk away and I never speak to this person again, because it's usually somebody that they know, work with, friends, something like that. If I cover this up and I never talk to them again, and they just go away and I go away, then this never happened and I don't have to deal with it.
And see, to me, I
understand. The other response, and this is way too common, it's a little less common than it used to be, but it's still way too common, is it is a fight with a rape victim to convince them that it's not their fault. And
anyone who gets raped, it's not their fault. It's the fault of the person that raped them.
I realize that, and that seems amazingly blatantly obvious to you, but that's where depression sneaks its way in. And it's that little voice in the back of your head that convinces you that you're not a worthwhile person. That same voice is in the back of a head of a rape victim going, you brought this on yourself. You wore the short skirt. You put on sexy underwear because you thought you were going on a date. It's your fault. You did this.
But then, is depression and denial the same thing?
Denial is...
Because to me, that seems like they go into a depression hoping to lapse into denial. You know, like you pointed out, this didn't happen. I'm going to move on and pretend this never happened. That's denial.
That's denial. That's a classic response. That's not depression. That's denial. They're two different things.
But they are linked.
They are linked. Yes, they can be linked. And certainly, if somebody goes into denial, they can be depressed. But again, the depression is that little voice in the back of your head that says, this is your fault. It's the same little voice that's in the back of my head that goes, you're not worth being alive today.
So do you think that is a cultural thing, that that depression has that this is your fault thing, or you know, like culturally, we're just now moving to the point where they can maybe realize that things are not their fault? Or do you think that is just something built into the illness at its core?
That is something built into the illness at its core. Luckily, society has finally reached the point. I mean, look at how we were in the 60s and, you know, up through the early 80s and in some cases, in some areas, even into the 2000s, where we had these giant asylums. And if there was something wrong with you, be it nymphomania, be it depression, be it severe autism, be it, you know, non-functional retardation, be it catatonism, any of this stuff, they would ship you off to the asylum and forget about you.
No, I think you should call it what they used to call it, the nut house.
The nut house, the loony bin.
Yes.
You know, it's not no use to. They still call them that.
Okay, well, then let's talk about the stigma of some of these words, like crazy and loony bin and nut house. Like last Halloween, we covered this on What the Fuck, okay? Where some British company had a costume of a escaped mental patient, okay? And the Mental Health Society had an issue with this. Well, you're characterizing mental patients as being, you know, because the guy's got buck teeth and blood all over him and a hatchet and stuff. And they're like, you're characterizing mental patients as something negative. And of course, the costume company pulled the thing. And I'm like, okay, why is there such a stigma now that you can't even have something innocent like that? Because, yes, I think a Halloween costume called Escape Mental Patient is innocent and does not reflect on real mental patients.
Well, speaking as a mental patient and speaking as someone who has spent time in the loony bin.
That I'm asking you.
And I'm telling
is you. Is that offensive or is that political correctness run amok? And this is a Halloween costume, fuck's sake.
It's not offensive to me, but I can see where it comes from. Part of the problem with mental illness, and especially here in the United States, and to some extent, a little bit lesser extent, but still to some extent in the UK and other places in the world, if you go and you get help for these mental issues, you're seen as somehow
less
weak. He just couldn't deal.
Well, that's because, like I said, you've got that whole manly thing. I mean, we are still coming off the generation that grew up with stop being a fag.
And we're fighting that.
You know?
And I can tell you this, as the mental health, those involved in mental health are fighting these stigmas, and we're fighting against that. So I can understand where escaped mental patient as a costume can be offensive. I call it something else, whatever, but I can understand where it can be offensive because it is an extreme struggle. Let me talk about the Army for a minute. I've got a few friends in the Army, and I've had a couple of friends come out of the Army and the Marines and the Navy, and a couple of them need help. But if they get help, they lose their status in the Army.
And now, is this help because of PTSD or help for just, and I'm sorry if I'm separating these, but just a normal mental illness? Because I consider PTSD almost, okay, you were using the term disease before.
Right.
As a disease, because PTSD is something forced on you that you did not have before.
Right.
Whereas something like depression or any kind of real mental disease, I think is something that's always there. It may not manifest, but it's always been there. PTSD is something that you get.
Yeah.
And I that's a distinction a lot of people don't like.
And I can tell you, it doesn't matter whether it's brought on by PTSD or whether it's brought on by chemical imbalance in the brain. You know, I mean, you say that it's something that you always kind of had and that just decides to show up. The first thing that came to my mind was herpes.
Well, do you think, to steal a bit from George Carlin, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but he's 100% right in his social analysis, do you think PTSD, for example, is due to the way we're referring to it? Because, like, you know, in World War II, the same symptom was called shell shock, you know, which has a much more manly tone to it. He's got shell shock.
It was the same disease, And I can tell you that back in World War II and in the Vietnam War, they didn't seek help for it then either. And they didn't seek help for it then either because the Army will basically officially go, oh, we fucked you up in battle. We don't need you anymore.
We worked with a guy when we worked at the other TV station who was an Iraq vet.
Yeah, let's call him Phil.
Okay, Phil. And I remember one night he smoked. And I was just, you know, I don't remember if you were with us or not, but I know I was joining him just to shoot the shit outside while he smoked because he can't smoke in the building. And it was storming out and a thunder and lightning crack happened. And you could see his eyes get wide and you could see terror on his face that he was flashing back to being in Iraq.
Yes.
Because of that thunderclap and that light, that it was almost he was going to seek cover and look for his rifle.
And my point, and yeah, I've seen the same reaction to you want to have some real fun? He worked master control, which means that he
actually put shit on the air.
Yeah, he actually put shit on the air. He buried his face in some monitors, and it was very easy to walk up behind him and startle him.
Yeah, because you'd have to ask him a question about something. And
exactly.
You know, you're not startling him to be a dick. You're startling him because he's not paying attention, you know, to you.
But I walked in and I tapped him on the shoulder once and he turned around and threw me against a wall and nearly started punching me simply because of reaction. The Marines, in his case, had broken him. But if he went and sought help, he would lose benefits.
As it seems a like a broken system.
It is a broken system. And that's my point. Not only in the Army do people react this way, not only will other soldiers and Marines and those in the Navy, and this is changing now. This is really, since the Second Iraq War, this is changing, thank God. But it used to be that if you sought help, and especially in World War II, if you sought help, you were less. You were right. If you were depressed... My stepfather, Jack, flew a bomber in World War II. He flew diversionary sorties over Japan so that they would shoot at him instead of the Enola Gay. He witnessed both atomic bombings. That fucked him up. He was a very, very good man and a very, very kind man, and I loved him deeply. But he was fucked up. And you could see it. And he refused to get help because of this stigma. Everybody is... It's very hard to convince someone if you're not bleeding or if you don't have sores or if you don't have some...
That there's a problem.
It's not only that there's a problem. It's easy to convince people that there's a problem. They'll see it and they'll point it out to you all the time. It's hard for people to understand that it's a disease and it's not something you can't just man up and fight against.
Well, to finish out the show, and this is going to change tonally but not topically, what about people that are fucking crazy? People like, you know, sadist serial killers, you know, Richard Ramirez, Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer. These
criminal
people
insanity.
Were fucking crazy. Do you think that they were undiagnosed as fucking crazy? Because of the system, or did the system just fail? Let's take Ramirez from the late 70s, okay? You know, the Night Stalker was fucking crazy. Manson was fucking crazy. The system is not the same one we had even when Dahmer was around. I mean, Dahmer was an exercise in fuck-ups. You know, thank you, Milwaukee police, idiots. But what's the difference between someone who's depressed, someone who maybe has OCD, someone who has, you know, anger issues, to fucking crazy.
The ones that you're talking about, the clinical term is criminal psychopathy.
I like fucking crazy better.
I like criminal psychopathy. And the reason being, criminals, Jeffrey Dahmer, Manson, and pretty much everybody you mentioned, their problem is they have no empathy. If you're in a rotating chair, and let's say you get a little overzealous and bang your knee against that desk, I'm going to say ow right along with you.
No, you'd laugh.
I would laugh, but I would say ow right along with you, and I understand the pain that you're going through. If I were to kick you in the balls, yes, I would laugh. But I wouldn't. All I have to say is kick you in the balls, and every man listening goes, "Oh, ooh, yeah." You know, in if you're watching a movie, and I can tell you if you're.
Hate seeing ball hits because it even just makes you go. Ugh.
Yeah, and I can. This is it's. If you want to have fun on a first date and make sure that you're not on a date with a psychopath, take him to a movie where somebody gets a good crunch to the balls.
So an Adam Sandler movie.
Right. And the reason being is because they will see that and they'll be like,
yeah, and?
And I feel no pain. Yeah, my dad, in order to be a surgeon, you have to have a little bit of psychopathy because you're cutting somebody open. So you have to be able to put that.
But you're doing it for the right reason.
You're doing it
for the right reason. And they're anesthetized.
Yes,
too.
And they're anesthetized, hopefully. But when my dad was doing ER stuff and somebody would come in, you know, it wasn't uncommon for a kid to get caught in a harvester. And that's ugly. And my dad sees this and he works with it and he works through it and he pushes and he saves a kid's life or whatever. But you look at dad and you go, how do you deal with this? How do you deal with it? And he looks and he goes, it's not my blood. It's not my body. It's my work. And that's a form of psychopathy. Criminal psychopathy is when oftentimes it's the criminal reaching out, attempting to understand these feelings that they can't deal with, attempting to deal with these emotions inside and wanting to feel like a regular human being. And it just so happens that the way they think they can feel like a regular human being is to wear their skin.
No, I disagree. Someone like Jeffrey Dahmer or Richard Ramirez were sadists. They enjoyed, they got pleasure. You know, Ted Bundy got pleasure,
and that's also
hurting other, knowing that someone else, they could empathize. That's the difference, Scott. Someone like Dahmer, they empathized. They enjoyed the fact that they know this hurts.
And that is still a miswiring of the brain. And there are clubs where you can express that wiring healthily. So yes. I agree with you, but there's still got to be some criminal psychopathy there. You've still got to be, if you can meet someone who is able to twist the head off of a kitten and feel no remorse over it, then you're on the criminal side.
Okay, what about then the sexual fucking crazy pedophiles and things like that, sexual sadists and all that? That they get off knowing that you're hurting. That to me is a difference, because when you add sex into anything, it goes to a different part of your brain.
See, and I can't.
To me, somebody like a pedophile, you can't cure that kind of thing. I'm not trying to say you can cure depression, but you can help it. You cannot cure sadism. You cannot cure pedophilia.
No, but you can control it.
I don't believe you can.
I believe you can. And the reason, now pedophilia, I don't know, because there hasn't been a whole lot of that. With the sadism, all you have to do is find the right people and see our episode on kink. Find the right people with consent. You're good to go. And you can express and control that side. I have that side too. There is a side of me that, and I'm not very proud of this, but there is a side of me that that is sadistic.
And see, but, I don't like to see people. I understand. To help people. If I see somebody fall down, yeah, I might laugh at them, but then I'm going to go see if they're okay.
I understand that, and that's normal. And I can tell you that most of the quote unquote sadists out there would react exactly the same way, as long as they have a healthy outlet. We're veering off topic here at the very.
We're running out of time too. We're going to have an abrupt tonal shift with the ending.
Okay. Listen, here is my takeaway message for this one is, if you're depressed, if you have that little voice in the back of your head telling you how worthless you are, I know exactly where you're coming from. I have the same voice. You're sick. Don't let people tell you just cheer up.
But I will also say this. But I will also say this. There's also people like you and I. I have had listeners reach out to me and tell me that listening to my show has helped them get through a very tough time in their life. That makes me feel like I have done something good. I have helped somebody. Yeah. So I encourage that. 1201beyond@gmail.com if you want to talk. Scott's on Facebook. Yeah. I'm on Facebook. We are there. If you want to just, I've shot the shit with listeners before, and they've told me that this really helped them.
And I appreciate that.
I like really helping people.
I agree. Who doesn't? But, and we're a little over time. I don't care.
I don't give a shit.
The point is, my point is, even if we've helped you, please do me a favor and seek a professional.
Please. Oh, yeah. I'm not saying use us as a cipher.
I know.
I'm saying that I know that we actually can help somebody too, or at least get them on a path.
Or at least, you know, but my deal is please see a professional and don't feel like less of a person if you take that extra step, because this is a sickness. This is a disease.
But I also do want to say, if you feel you can't talk to somebody, Scott and I will always listen to you. And we don't pass judgment. We'll fuck around with you, but in a fun way.
I still say see a professional. If you
well, yeah, to. But, you know, some people can't. So I'd rather have them talk to us than nobody. Yeah.
The truth is, if you're listening to this show, you're not a worthless individual. We care. And I know that sounds silly because we've got a microphone between us, but we do. We care. And I don't want to hear about any of my listeners doing something stupid, because I know that you're better than that. And please, even if you can't talk to somebody, there are national suicide hotlines. If that little voice gets a little loud, which mine does, I know exactly where you're coming from. So thank you all very much for joining us. And I'm sorry we're about 3 minutes over here, but
enjoy the Godzilla-ish music.
Yeah, we will see you in the future.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows. 4